We've got an amazing speaker for you tonight, and Miss Becky's going to do us the honors of introducing this fine young man. Yeah, I got you. Fine young man. Thank you, Miss Becky.
You're welcome, darling.
Appreciate it.
Y'all doing a great job.
You've got 3 hours.
Hi, everybody. My name is Becky, and I am a drug addict. I'm here today just to introduce my friend, David W. David and I are both from Expect a Miracle Group in Burleson, Texas. So we drove up here, and I was in the group and in recovery when David came in. I've been able to watch him, and I will tell you that his recovery did not come easy to him. He had to work for it. But he does have it now, and he lives his program out loud. You're going to really enjoy his speaking, and it's very moving. So come on up, and here you go.
I'm an addict from Texas. My name's David.
Hey.
Hi, y'all. I just wanted to say that like that. Hey, listen, before I get this thing started, let me take one moment. Listen, the main thing, this is a spiritual program. If I could take just 1 minute to invite my God into this meeting, and if you'll take 1 minute to invite your God into this meeting, maybe we can get out of the way and there can be more of him and less of us. Okay, can we do that? Thank you. Whew, wow, what an honor and a blessing. I look around this room, man, a lot of love, a lot of miracles. You know, shout out to Nick. Where you at, Nick? All right. Dude, everybody needs a Nick on their committee. Let me tell you how Nick found me. Nick found me on the internet. That is no bullshit. I'm a big Facebook junkie, all right? I'm a social butterfly, and now I'm an old married man, and so I don't have a social life, so I do the social, you know, the internet stuff. Anyhow, me and Nick evidently are connected to a couple of recovery groups on there, and out of nowhere, he just sent me a message and said, "Hey, would you happen to have any copies, you know, of you speaking anywhere?" And I'm like, dude, I got one. And like, other people have asked, you know, over the years, could I hear, you know? So I thought he was just somebody that wanted it. And I was like, okay, but you got to give it back to me because it's the only one I got. So I mail it to him. And then he tells me, I'm on the committee for this Hanging in the Fort convention. And I was like, no shit. And they whittled it down. And somehow or another, all the other committee's members got on board. And it's like, all right, I guess God wants me to go to Arkansas. So that's pretty cool, you know. Where's my girls at? They're, my Arkansas girls, Jennifer and Kristen. I've known these girls for the last 9 years. I ran into them at a convention in Corpus Christi, Texas, and then years later, I ran into them and got to hang out with them at the World Convention in Orlando, Florida. And they just drove fucking 3 hours to get here. And on that, love you. You know, and then my girl Becky. Listen, okay, yeah, it worked out good. Becky's my predecessor. Becky just celebrated 40 years. 40. She has been around my whole journey. Oh, that reminds me, by the way, I have been clean since July the 6th of 2006. For that, I am truly grateful, and so are a lot of other people, because I'm no longer trying to steal their shit. You get that? Laughter is a form of identification. You know? I can't tell you how many times I've called her over the years with some shit, you know? Because
I really wanted to put her up tonight. I wanted to gratefully bow out since she accepted my offer to come up here with us this weekend. Becky has beaten everything that there is to beat, including drug addiction, hepatitis, cancer, her ex-husband. You know, am I lying? I ain't lying. I hope she said. Anyhow, so they had a speaker back out. So she is sharing at 1 o'clock tomorrow. And if y'all aren't doing anything at 1 o'clock tomorrow, please come in here and you will enjoy the shit out of her because she is down to earth and redneck as they come, man. And she shoots straight from the hip, and it is awesome. God. I brought a newcomer with me. Everybody needs to meet Elijah G. Elijah just celebrated 6 months. This is the cool part. So for the last 6 months, I've been telling him this shit is a lot fucking bigger than... By the way, I'm going to cuss. If cussing offends you, let me apologize right now. You probably picked the wrong fucking night to sit in on a speaker meeting. So I've been telling Elijah, man, this fellowship, it's a lot bigger than this one group and this 1 hour every night, dog. You got to, you need to see and experience, you know. And when this came up, I'm like, Elijah, you're with me this weekend. Come on. And so here we are in another state, dog. And like, look around. These motherfuckers have been where we've been, and they're trying to go where we're trying to go, man. You know. And the last I checked, I'm going to be wrong, but I'm going to be close. This fellowship has now translated into 32 different countries around the world. In 32 different languages. Like, it is truly a worldwide fellowship. You know, the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. Like, nobody understands me like you. You know? And the funny part about all this shit is, like, I've heard it said, I think the ladies that were sharing earlier, you know, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans for your life, right? Right. If I'd had my way about it, I wouldn't know anything about this. Wouldn't be here with y'all, wouldn't know anything. Like, I had a plan, and the plan was going according to plan. And what happened was, what happened was that in January of 1987, my God wanted me here in Arkansas so bad tonight that in January of 1987, he shut down an entire college football program to put me on the path to get me here to you tonight. I'll share more about that in a little bit. You know, listen, growing up, now I know we've got some people that went through some serious shit when they were young, you know, and my heart goes out to them. You know, I can't say I wasn't never sexually molested. I didn't, you know, I wasn't picked on and bullied, and I none of that shit. About the only thing that made me different in any sort of way when I was young was I was adopted. I'm adopted, okay, and that's something that I have worked through in my recovery. You know, I had a biological father that chose not to be a part of my life, and that's okay. Now that I'm older and wiser, I know that's about him and not about me. But it took years of working through the recovery process to get to that point. What was wrong with me that he didn't want to be a part of my life? What was wrong with me? You know, I fought with that for a long time. And we were talking about earlier about the people pleasing and wanting everybody to like you. I really, between the recovery and the therapy and the shit like that, I really traced that back to still trying to gain the acceptance of a father that wasn't around. You know, I still want everybody to like me. You know, I know we are taught it's not my business what other people think about me, but I still kind of hurt if somebody don't like me. And I get that. I'm not everybody's fucking cup of tea. Hell, not everybody's my cup of tea.
but I still want you to like me, dog. Come on. I'm just trying to love. Anyhow, I was born and raised out in Burleson. I've been out there my whole life, you know. growing up, I was always a troublemaker, I was, you know, and I had one thing going for me back when I was younger. I was good in sports, okay? And so that kind of carried me through. Sorry. That kind of carried me through my younger years, you know, because I mean, I was a football player. I was in middle school and high school. I was a football player and a track star, and you know, I was kind of doing my thing. And for some reason, believe it or not, of all people, my mother passed away about 7 years ago, and I now have a stepmom, and that's awkward as fuck. You're not recording this, are you? Sorry, Mama. No, I'm just kidding. But she's the one that we were talking about it, and she's like, yeah, you were born with a ball in your hand. And I was like, you know what? I was born with a ball in my hand. Like, all that shit just came easy for me for some reason. Like, I was just athletically inclined. I was. And so that probably there was a little bit of enabling going on, because as long as I was doing good, like, I skirted a lot of trouble that I probably should have got in my younger years, you know. And so I was good enough that I got a little scholarship offer to a junior college there in Texas. But in high school, like, we sucked. You know, I don't even know what to say. Burleson High School, I didn't win a fucking game at the varsity level in high school when I was playing. I didn't. I won my very first game at Cisco Junior College as a freshman. And I sat down at midfield and cried like a fucking little kid, because I was so fucking happy that I really was a winner, you know? Anyhow, I only had that one, like, we were so bad, like, we were bad. I don't even know what to say. We had fun and we tried hard, I did, you know? Anyhow, so I got one little scholarship offer out of high school, and it was to a junior college. And I went out there and took off. Man, I took off like a rocket. I went out there in 1984. In 1984, I received the Freshman of the Year honors and something, I can't remember something else. Anyhow, then my sophomore year, I made first team All-Conference and first team All-American. You know, I stand before you tonight, a first team All-American college football player. Like, that's fucking badass. It's okay to say that. Every year there's only 11 people that get that honor, and in 1985 I was one of those 11 people. It's okay. So all that's doing well, and when you and our team was pretty good, and I was a fucking standout, you know, and the major colleges, this thing right here. The major colleges come flocking in. Like, I could have went, after my 2 years at Cisco, I could have went to anywhere in the United States. I had scholarship offers from fucking Hawaii to Michigan to Florida State. I could have went anywhere. And I chose Southern Methodist University. I got picked up by SMU back in the middle of the 1980s when SMU, like, okay, but I don't know who all knows about the history of college football, but back before there was NIL, there was SMU. When they came calling, now I shit you not, this is a true story. All he said was, if you'll come play for us, you will not want for anything. And it was close to home. And it was in the Southwest Conference, and it was on TV every week, and it was fucking, yes. Yes. And so I get picked up by SMU, and I'm over there, and I'm doing fairly well, you know, I'm getting plenty of playing time. Just moving on to the next level, you know, and the goal was to play on Sunday. You know, that was the goal. That was always the goal, play on Sunday. And
And of course, pro scouts are coming in and out all the time, you know. And I can tell you, I see the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Cincinnati Bengals, and the San Francisco 49ers. They came and interviewed me and ran me through some agilities. And like, this is just my junior year. I still got one more year to play after this, right? And they're letting me know I'm already on their radar. Hey, we just want you to know we're keeping up with your progress. And, you know, oh, fuck yeah. I forgot. Yeah, that cat right there. Yeah, that cat right there. Hey, that cat right there in that photo, he's 6'4", 235 pounds. He bench presses 400. He squats over 500, and he runs a 4.640. Wow. Here's the fucking best part. I had 6% body fat. I was a lean, mean, fucking hitting machine. And now I've got like 60% body fat. You know what I'm saying? Oh, shit. Hey, where'd the lady go that didn't tell the joke that was supposed to tell a joke? Is she still here?
No, she
had to leave. So an addict walks into an MHMR facility. And he says, ma'am, I think I need some help. I have a drug problem. And she says, take these papers and go over there and sit down and fill them out. And when you get done, bring them back to me. So he goes over there and sits down. And while he's filling out the paperwork, he looks up there and he notices, you know, the words about MHMR, mental health, mental retardation. And he's like, so he goes up there and says, excuse me, ma'am. Maybe I'm in the wrong place. I'm not retarded. And she says, let me ask you something, young man. Can you stop doing drugs? And he says, no, ma'am. And she says, set your retarded ass down and finish throwing out that paperwork. Oh, my God. So where was I? Oh, anyhow, I'm over at SMU. Yeah. And we're on TV every week. And are the girls here that I was telling the Arkansas story to? Yeah. The last time I was in Arkansas, I had anything to do with Arkansas, we were playing the University of Arkansas at Texas Stadium at our home. And the University of Arkansas had already accepted a bid to the Orange Bowl. And y'all's fucking fans came to our place, and I was down on the field, and them motherfuckers were throwing oranges at us. I mean, oranges like that hadn't been peeled with the skin and all. And to this very day, I can remember standing down there getting ready to, you know, for the ball to be snapped to make a play, and hearing this whistling coming through the air. And then this fucking orange would just hit, bam, right there in front of you. And I remember thinking, damn, if one of them hits me, it's going to fucking knock me down. Damn. And good times. So that was the last experience I had with Arkansas until I got through the invite. And I was like, cool, I get to go to Arkansas. I was telling a friend of mine, I said, I got to go to Arkansas and share. And he said, a fucking redneck's gonna go tell some hillbillies about some recovery? Yeah, I guess that's what's fixing to happen. I need to keep moving, man. So, I have a TV interview. And it's really cool now that I'm on down the line, because I had this TV interview that I can show my grandkids. My oldest granddaughter is now 13. So I've showed them Peepaw. They call me Peepaw. And she's like, that's cool. You're on TV, Peepaw. And I'm like, yeah. And she said, were you famous? My wife said, either famous or infamous, depends on who you're talking to. So Peepaw was sort of famous, you know. Yeah, I had a nice little run. But this TV interview, like, all during my younger years, Like, the addiction was there. I just didn't know it was there because there was so much enabling. Okay? I can remember partaking of the devil's lettuce in the sixth grade. I can remember going to school snot-slinging drunk on the liquid dope as a freshman in high school. And that's just how I went through my younger years. Like, but nobody ever called me on my shit because I was still the guy. You know what I'm saying? And as long as I kept doing what I'm doing. Anyhow, so I got this TV interview and I had just smoked a big old fat joint and fucking was going to practice. And our PR guy says, "Hey, David, Channel 5's here and they want to interview." And I'm like, fucking cool. You know, and so we do this TV interview and it gets played. But watching it, if you know what you're looking at, now it's cool, it's a TV interview, but if you know what you're looking at, I'm stoned to the bone. You can see I've got the glossy eyes and the big shitting grin on my face. Yeah. You know? And it's kind of embarrassing. You know? I every time I watch it, that's just all I think, and my daughters are proud of me, and my grandkids think it's cool that people always on TV, and all I can think is, damn, you fucking stupid ass. So I'm over there and things are going good. And I already told y'all before there was NIL, there was SMU, right? If any of y'all have ever seen the Pony Access, that ESPN special, what's it called? The Pony Access, the 30 for 30. You've seen me on there a few times. So I get asked a lot, you know, hey, you know, damn, Dave, what all did you get? You know, and I always reply the same thing. Well, I didn't get near as much as some of them motherfuckers were getting. I didn't know that they were passing it out like that, or I sold myself way short. Like, you know, I was just happy I didn't ever want for anything or need for anything. Anytime I needed some money, I went to my coach and said, hey, coach, I need some fucking tires. I need some money. Okay. But some of them guys were making some bank. Anyhow, and so the NCAA caught wind of it, and for those of you that don't know, SMU got the death penalty. They shut the entire fucking football program down. I am part of NCAA history for all the wrong reasons. I am part of the team that got the death penalty. So, and this is the part, I wonder where that brother is I was telling. There's always some fucking pussy involved somewhere. I was in love with this little girl back home. You know, and when the shit went south and they shut the football program down, I thought, all right, I'm just going to take a year off and go back home and get with the girl, and then we'll finish up and see where it goes from there. I need to keep moving. I ain't even got strung out yet. So I come home, this little girl's running around with a bunch. I know we're not supposed to mention specific drugs, but like, and really my drug of choice ended up being more, if I'm being honest. I did have some favorites, like I was very fond of methamphetamines and cocaine. I don't know how to substitute the word cocaine for cocaine, you know? So, I come home and this little girl's running around with a bunch of people that are doing methamphetamines. I'm like, all right, well, and to this point, I've just now, you know, a semi-functioning fucking pothead and alcoholic. I'm like, all right, if I'm going to be around here, I might as well try this shit out. So at the age of 21 years old, when I should have known better, I tried my first line of methamphetamines. You know, and I'm not sure how long the timeline is between that. And I tell you what, after I did that first line, I had a new love. I didn't love that girl anymore. I fell in love. You understand me? You understand me? I don't ever know what ever happened to that girl. So I get turned on to powder, and you know, and snorting. And you know, after you've done enough powder for so long that your nose is completely stopped up and you can't fucking put anything up there no more. Now, I don't know what that time frame was, but somewhere in there, a friend of mine introduced me to a U100 insulin syringe. He said, I can show you how to do that where you won't have to worry about that right there anymore. And he pulled out a U100, and this is how fucking dumb I was. Like, when I was in college, I was injecting steroids because everybody was. Like, they just did steroids, right? But them steroid syringes are fucking 10-gauge syringes that you got to get down into the quick of your muscle. They're big-ass fucking syringes. And I seen that little bitty U100 syringe, and I was like, this ain't going to be shit. Whatever. Yeah. And I blasted off that first time, and God damn. I don't have to tell you, you know, the addiction went full-blown. The addiction went full-blown. You know, I'm not big on war stories. I'm not. But I can tell you. Oh, yeah. Right. There's a junkie. There's a junkie first class. Junkie first class. That dude right there in that photo weighed about $175 and thought he still was looking all right and doing good. You know? I couldn't fucking understand it, man. Why all this fucking bad luck, man? Anyhow, so I'm trucking along, man. I'm, like I said, I'm not big on war stories. I'm not. But if you go to publicdata.com and type in David R. West and hit print, I can tell you 22 pages later, the printer stops printing. It's got robbery, it's got theft, it's got possession, it's got assault, and it's got shit, I don't know. So much shit on there. And it might as well just say drugs. Like, there is 22 pages of a drug addict with a problem that don't know he's got a problem. That can't fucking figure out why all this fucking bad shit is happening to him. You know, it took me to the penitentiary 3 times. I also stand before you today, a 3-time loser. My TDC number is 761835. Spent 3 different stretches down there. The fucking longest stretch I ever spent was 5 years. It sounds fucking stupid even saying it now. I spent 5 fucking calendar years in the Texas penitentiary system. And the lady earlier said, she was right. It's not fucking air conditioned. If it's 110 degrees outside, it's a fucking 110 degrees inside. Going to prison was rough, but it probably saved my fucking life. Because let me tell you, I'm big on H&I, and I did H&I forever until I couldn't fucking do it no more. Because somebody cared enough to carry a meeting into the penitentiary that I was in. And let me tell you how it was. So I'm doing time with these guys, and this one guy, you know, we're sharing war stories and blah, blah, blah. He said, I go to these meetings upstairs in the AV room. He said, you ought to come check one out sometime. Fuck, all I heard was AV room. It's air conditioned up there. Air conditioned, I'm in. And I go up there, and these motherfuckers are talking about me. I was introduced to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. I could not believe it, man. Like, this book, shit. I can't pull it out. The basic text. Hey, listen, if you're here tonight and you haven't read the first 107 pages of this book, you're doing yourself a very fucking disservice. This is a fucking book that would change your life. It changed my life. Somebody cared enough to put down into words. God had the foresight to put it on somebody's heart, to put it into words how I was going to think and how I was going to feel before I even fucking knew how I was going to think and how I was going to feel. It's crazy. It's crazy. I was reading some. Let me tell you another how fucked up I am.
every time I get asked to share, this is going to be the time. This is going to be the time I'm going to have my shit together. I'm going to be able to quote this shit word for word. I'm going to be that guy. And I got to reading that fucking book again and got all fucking lost again in the book. Like, look at all the highlighting. Like, it's just me. It's just me. It's over and over. It's me. Ah, there I am. Oh my God, that's too good. Remember in the book where it says, in the beginning, using was fun? I hear people in meetings sometimes say, yeah, my worst day clean, better than my best day hide. I get what you're trying to say, Doc, but come on. Come on. My connect was obviously better than your connect then. But I had some pretty damn good days before them consequences started catching up. You know, those fucking consequences. Yeah. So I'm in the penitentiary and you know, and I learn about recovery and I get out, and this is where I enter Becky P's life. And I got out of the penitentiary the last time in March of 2001. Remember, I told y'all my clean day is 2006. Hold on, I'm still a dumbass. I get out of the penitentiary. I do what is suggested. I find a fucking group, and I fall in, and I fucking get to rocking and rolling. This is where I got to give a shout out to our fucking the other fellowship. So I didn't know Burleson had an NA group, but I found an AA group. Okay. I'll give them their props. They put up with my shit for about 3 days. After sharing about wanting to do a fucking shot, a big old thick 30, finally somebody, some little brother said, come here, let me show you something. And he drove me right down the street and he said, this is a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. You need to go in there. And I was like, yes, yes. And I walked in Expect a Miracle group and fucking just felt at home. And just felt at home. My people. Y'all are my people. Y'all are my people. Nobody gets me like you get me. Fuck, keep moving. I got a fucking... I got a reservation and I ain't learned about your reservations yet. I don't even know it. I get out of the penitentiary and I'm like, okay, God. See, my ex-wife has divorced me and took my kids and moved on. Right? I battle with loneliness. I do. I don't anymore, but I did for a long time. Hold on. I'm getting there. So I get out of the penitentiary and I'm like, okay, God, you got 6 months to put a woman in my life. I'm going to give this all I got for 6 months. And if you don't put a woman in my life, I'm going to, you know. And 6 months came and went. And God went on to prove to me that He is God and I am not. 6 months came and went and I didn't fucking have no love life. And so what did I do? I did the only thing I know to do. Got a pocket full of dope and a pocket full of cocaine and went to the titty bar. And substituted sex for love. And when the money was all gone and the dope was all gone, the chicks were all gone, and there I was, sick, sad, and sorry, and alone again, and fucked off everything I've been trying to do. This is a process that repeated itself 4 fucking times. Can't be alone. I gotta have somebody in my life. Can't be alone. And you know, and now here it is fucking almost 20 years later, and fuck, I just fucking wish I could be alone. Women are hard. Now I say that like that and it gets some laughs, right? But what you really should be hearing is that I still struggle in relationships and I still struggle with communication. You know, this book says romances and finances are our 2 most problematic areas. My experience shows this to be true. I met a brother. I hope that brother's still here. I met a brother going through a divorce earlier. Fuck, I've been through fucking 4 of them, brother. Just keep rolling. The first one was tough. You're going to cry like a little kid. You're going to fucking curl up in the fetal position. You're going to cry. You will be okay.
you know? And then after you go through it a few times, it's like, okay, next. Hey, I'm on wife number five. I call her number five. Hey, number five. And that fucking, and that's how the fight starts. It's taken me five tries, but I get it now. If mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. I am a yes, dear man. Now, I don't know if it's because I've got old and got tired of fighting or I've gotten wiser or what, but yes, ma'am. Whew. Anyhow, so I picked up fucking, between 2001 and 2006, there's four fucking white key tags. Right? If you're here tonight and you've had to pick up more than one key tag, fucking please keep coming back. Please. Because I'm telling you, when the bottom fell out and I didn't know what the fuck was to do next, I knew I could get to a meeting. So that last run, you know, this book says that only a nuclear blast will initiate another course of action. A nuclear blast. Fuck, where are my glasses?
There they are.
A nuclear blast. July the 6th of 2006. That is my mother's birthday. My mother has since departed this world and moved on. My mother was going to have a birthday party. I had just come home from about a two-month run. Couldn't even fucking hold my head up. She said, are you going to come to the birthday party the family's having? I'm like, I can't go, Mom. And she didn't fucking start griping. I seen the hurt in her eyes. That's part one of this. After the birthday party is over, my ex-wife comes by. And she hands me a piece of paper. And she says, you might want to take a look at this. This is what your daughter did for show and tell at school. Now, I keep a fucking... It's been almost 20 years. If the good Lord's willing and the creeks don't rise... That lady said that earlier. I'll celebrate 20 years in July 6th. I carry a fucking photocopy. I've been carrying this in my fucking wallet for the last 20 years. There's the photocopy. Okay. Thought I'd bring it. I keep the original in a keepsake at my house. I thought I'd bring it tonight. My daughter, for show and tell at school, y'all, my 10-year-old daughter, she didn't bring her favorite toy. She didn't fucking tell about a family vacation they went on. My daughter wrote a story. My daughter wrote a story. And this side over here, it says, a day at the park. And it says, one day at the park, my daddy was swinging me. Then my daddy started pushing me on the swing, and my mom Candace and my sister Brianna were eating. We had lots of food, and it was so fun. Spaghetti, bread, and chocolate chip cookies. It was fun. By Brittany. And she drew a picture of me pushing her on the swing. And then on this side of the fucking paper, she says, Daddy's in jail. She said, the next week we got a call and it was from Daddy. And I was so happy that I got to talk to him, and then I was sad. And I said, where are you? And I asked him, and I could have swore he was crying. So I asked him again, Daddy, where are you? And he said, baby girl, I'm in jail. And I asked, what did you do? And he said, a lot of bad things. And so I said, I love you. And he said, I have to go. Bye. And I said, bye, Daddy. And Mommy said, Daddy will be home soon. The end. It's got a fucking picture of me in jail. God damn it. Dude. Having to come face to face with the actions, I fucking tainted the mind of a little kid. I tainted the mind of an innocent child. You know, we got some sick fucking morals in our life. And I always said, I ain't fucking hurting them. I'm not hurting my kids. I never did anything around my kids. I just never wasn't around my kids. Get the picture? Like, I ain't hurting them. Having to come face to face with my actions, the consequences of my actions, it was too much. It's still too much. Every time I had to fucking tell this story, it's too much. One of these days, I pray to God, can I just tell it one time without fucking breaking down? Fuck. It's fucking embarrassing. That's it, man. That's it. I wouldn't give a fuck what happens, nigga. I ain't fucking touching that shit ever fucking again. Fuck you. Yeah. So I fell back in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous on the day of July 6th of 2006, picked up my fourth fucking white keys tag, and I said, whatever. Whatever. You tell me what to do, I do it. I don't ask questions, I fucking do it. Narcotics Anonymous was the only place where I found somebody having success beating that shit. I remember the first time that I read that we're not bad people trying to get good, we're just sick people trying to get well. You know? Fuck, thank God. Something's wrong with me and we have a way to address it. I'm not a fuck up. You know, y'all told me to get a sponsor. Got a sponsor. Y'all told me to work some steps. Work some steps. I brought that thing too, man. Just because I was curious. Been a while since I fucking looked at this motherfucker. Listen, if you're here tonight and you struggle with your step work, I wanted Elijah to know, like, this is a marathon. This is not a sprint. My sponsor was kind enough to put the date that I'd finished each step on. Anybody want to guess how long it took me to get through the steps one time? 8 years. 8 years. It took me 8 years to complete all 12 steps. So if you're here tonight and you're slow go, it's okay. It's okay. Just keep fucking moving forward. The lady said earlier, if you're not going forward, you're going backwards by default. Fucking answer one question. Answer one question. Put it up. Keep moving forward. So if you're fucking behind 8 years, get your ass in gear. And if you're ahead of 8 years, good job. I've been through the steps twice now. I have. Let me tell you. Working the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous with a sponsor is the most loving, caring thing that I have ever done for myself as a man. Let me say that again loud and clear. Working the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous with a sponsor is the most loving, caring thing that I have ever done for myself as a man. It helped me fucking take a look at the past and put it to bed and recognize my part and not my part and be okay with it. It helped me not dread the future and the uncertainty there. And it helped me be okay with me today. Like, I'm no longer confused about who I am or what I am. Like, gone are the days of fucking loneliness. I'm okay in my skin today. I owe every bit of that to the 12 steps. You know, in this program, like, I could share with you, like, all the shit that you see on the outside, like the new house and the new truck and the new boat and, you know, being with the same woman for the last 15 years, and which is a record for me, by the way. Amen is God. You know, I can share with you all that shit. That's just external shit. Like, the shit I'm talking about is the inside. This book says recovery is an inside job. Like, you got to fucking get in, you know. You got to get in. You got to get serious. You got to get gut level honest. I promise you. I promise you. It is well worth the effort. Your heart and your mind, there will, God, so much clarity and so much growth, you know. Recoveries, that book says that fucking... says personality change is what we really needed. Fucking change from our self-destructive patterns. No shit. Says any form of success was frightening and unfamiliar. No shit.
Like, everything can be going great for me in my life, and I'm be like, yeah, that fucking bitch don't love me anymore. This fucking job's fixing to fire me. This fucking kids. You know? We're just so used to the other shoe dropping, I have to really stop and concentrate on gratitude.
Yeah.
Hey, man, while we're in here talking and laughing and learning about recovery, some motherfucker just fucking died from an overdose. Like, that's what we're fucking talking about here, if you want to know the truth, the gut level honest truth. Along this journey, I've had two different men, their names deserve to be said. Justin and Sheldon. Justin thought he had one more in him, and they found him hung underneath a bridge in Haltom City. These are men that were in my life and a part of my life that I tried to share some recovery with, but didn't take it. Sheldon thought he had one more in him, and his family found him in a tractor on their ranch, dead of a fucking overdose. That was just last year. Elijah, your fucking life depends on it, brother. That motherfucker died of a fentanyl overdose. Okay? You got to fucking take this shit serious like your life depends on it. Because it does. You got some people counting on you. You know? Woo! So I got a sponsor. Y'all told me to start making meetings. Fuck. Hey, listen. My first sponsor one told me. No, it's actually my second sponsor. He said, I didn't know. He's the one that told me. I didn't know. He said, David, it was almost a year and a half before you dared to miss a meeting. That's how fucking scared I was. They tell you to make a meeting a day for the first 90 days. Yeah, my ass was in a fucking seat every night for a year and a half. And I was scared. Like, I went all in. Like, if it wasn't Narcotics Anonymous, it wasn't in my life. We had a fucking, there was a good group of us back then. I missed those days. Like, all we did was eat, breathe, and shit recovery. I missed that shit. I can't do this all the time, full time anymore. I got responsibilities. We want it so bad to get alive, and then we get alive, and it's like, fuck this life. Can I just go back to recovery? Can I just go back to chasing recovery? I called Becky one time. I've shared this story with them already. I called Becky a year or two ago, and I'm like, fuck, I fucking got this going on, I got that going on, I fucking get this, and where's the fucking balance? Does it get any easier? And she said, no. And I'm like, fuck, that is not what I wanted to hear, Becky. She said, you just do the best you can, keep moving forward, trust your higher power. You know? So that's what I do. I try to do the best I can, man. Along the way, man, some of the relationships that I built, some of the things that I've done more living in the last 19 years than I did in the first fucking 40 years of my life. This journey has taken me places I never ever... Who the fuck thought I'd be in Arkansas and fucking Fort Smith, Arkansas on a Friday night talking to a bunch of hillbillies about some fucking recovery? My God did. That's awesome. I love that motherfucker. I'm sorry I cuss. I told my wife, said, try not to cuss when you get up there. And I'm like, I get excited, man. Like, this shit saved my life. You know? Yeah. And when I get excited, I don't know, cuss words spice up the conversation. I don't know. I love all of you. My time is up. Hey, listen, in keeping with the theme for the weekend, why we stay. Okay. This last birthday, when I celebrated 19 years, I asked my oldest daughter to come give me my medallion. So my oldest daughter comes to group. And these are going to be tears of gratitude this time, okay? While we stay. My oldest daughter got up and she said, you know, I don't really know what to say up here because as long as I can remember, my dad has been a part of my life and there for me.
And that says everything that fucking Narcotics Anonymous has done for me. I've been there for my fucking kids, good, bad, right or wrong, through thick and thin. I've been able to be there for them. I've been able to be a parent to my kids. I've been able to be a son to my mom and dad. I've been employable. God damn. I'm employable. God damn. I've got a fucking 830 credit score. We got them now. Anyhow. Now I want to thank y'all all so much for putting up with me tonight. Thank you for letting me share. I love you all. Thank you.